You're listening to a special three-hour Flashpoint series, the U.S.-Israeli savaging of the Gaza Strip, a 21st-century war crime. For 22 days, the Israeli military savaged the Gaza Strip by land, air, and sea. 1.5 million Palestinians, already pushed to the brink of starvation and humanitarian disaster after 18 months of an Israeli blockade and the hermetical sealing of the crossings in and out, watched in horror as the tiny Gaza Strip became a weapons lab for the latest in non-conventional weaponry and urban warfare. Entire city blocks were destroyed by one-ton U.S.-made missiles, tank shellings, and white phosphorus as tens of thousands of Palestinians became internally displaced inside the most densely populated place on Earth, the open-air prison of Gaza, with food, water, electricity, fuel, medicine, and basic supplies difficult to access.
The Israeli military employed the latest technology in bunker busters and the new so-called dime bombs that explode into thousands of tiny dust particles that ravage the body and leave the rare survivors of this new weapon to face multiple amputations. Flechettes were packed into tank shells, exploding into thousands of razor-sharp pieces of shrapnel that literally shred the body. Indeed, tons of the latest in anti-personnel munitions, including white phosphorus, were dropped on a civilian population of 1.5 million people with nowhere to run or hide.
For 22 days, F-16 and F-15 fighter jets, Apache attack helicopters, ship-to-shore missiles, radio-controlled drones, tanks, armored personnel carriers, and giant military bulldozers were unleashed against the people trapped inside the Gaza Strip, a thread of land 5 miles wide and 22 miles long, sealed on all borders.
During its assault on Gaza, Israel banned all foreign and domestic journalists from entering the Strip, thus exerting great control over the flow of information. Nevertheless, through the Arab media networks, cell phone reports, and the internet, information spilled out, and most of the world, except for the United States, was given a sense of this modern-day state-sponsored savagery through word and image.
As the producers of the daily drive-time news magazine Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we made the decision to devote the entire hour every day to the witnessing of Gaza. We wanted to make a contemporaneous record of the massive Israeli attack to help counteract the very effective U.S.-Israeli propaganda machine.
I'm just looking into the outside from my window and I could see some Apaches are coming again.
For the last 3 days, more than 6 paramedics killed by the Israelis' fire.
There was this chemical substance in it because the mother had a serious burn on her face. The 3-year-old child was burned on the face and the arm.
Our Flashpoint's special correspondents included local Palestinian journalists and human rights activists, doctors, medics, UN workers, and many courageous activists working with the International Solidarity Movement, some of whom accompanied the Palestinian Red Crescent Society in ambulances traveling through the most dangerous areas of the Israeli killing fields.
Their voices came to us often late at night in Gaza, over shaky, static-ridden lines. Troubled but clear, our correspondents narrated the expanding landscape of destruction. The stories they told of the people they met and the brutality of the Israeli attacks were at first hardly bearable or believable. But with concurring reports and in-depth eyewitness accounts mounting, the truth emerged in frightening detail.
2 weeks into the savage attack from the ground, the air, and the sea, we spoke with UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, Richard Falk, about the violent U.S.-sponsored Israeli onslaught against an entrapped civilian population with no protection or means to flee. Falk, who had been denied entrance into Israel-Palestine a month before the attacks began, referred to Israel's actions in Gaza as a potentially new kind of war crime.
Falk told Flashpoints, quote, "We think there is no doubt that the Israeli attacks since December 27th constitute massive violations of international humanitarian law and of the UN Charter that prohibits the non-defensive use of force." He went on to say on this program, quote, "The overall tactics that have been employed by Israel have one feature that has not been very well articulated in the media, and that is the entrapment of a civilian population in a war zone. The Gazans have been denied the option of becoming refugees, which is, of course, not a pleasant option to choose. But if you are seeking safety from a war zone that is threatening your life and the life of your family and children and so on, the refugee option is the least terrible option available to civilian society, particularly in a place like Gaza, where the density of population is so great and the area is so small. But Israel has closed the exit, has basically locked the population into this war zone. And as far as I know, that hasn't really happened before in such a systematic way, and it probably should be considered a new kind of war crime. That was Richard Falk, UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories.
What follows is a contemporaneous daily accounting of the savaging of the Gaza Strip from December 27th to January 18th with 21st century weapons. You hear it through the voices of those most affected, as well as their friends and supporters who came to Gaza to help and bear witness to the brutality, risking their lives in the process. For Flashpoints, this is Dennis Bernstein with Nora Barrows-Friedman. Now listen to this.
We begin with the very first reports from Gaza the day Israel began its assault, December 27th. Journalist Hatem Shirab sets the scene from Gaza City.
We didn't know that it will be at that time and as hard as it was. At 11:30 this morning, I visited my friend and I was moving in the street to go back to my home. Suddenly, an Israeli missile hit a police compound near my home, and then another police station also close to my home. It was very sudden, and I couldn't even think of what to do. I ran to my home. I found the glass fall on the ground. I found stones and rebels out of the explosions hit my home, and my brother my brother-in-law was at home and he was injured because of the glass that broke. I tried to calm down my mother and my sister who were there and my brother, and then I had a friend who lives in another area, and he got a phone call that his neighbor was killed in another airstrike in the middle of the Gaza Strip, not in Gaza City. And I took him to my home. He was very sad, as everyone here in Gaza. And everyone, you can say, when you go on the street and you meet anyone, you find someone who lost a dear friend or a dear member of the family. It is affecting everyone in Gaza this time, the children, the women. And I saw women crying in the streets who could not do anything, just standing near the walls and cry. This is something Palestinians doesn't deserve. Palestinians deserve to have peaceful life and bitter and distant life, but they are punished, and this is really something horrible. So this injustice is, I don't think that there is such injustice in the world like what happens for the Palestinians in Gaza.
Freelance journalist and blogger Safa Judah reports from Gaza City.
It was just before noon when I heard the first explosion. I rushed to my window, and barely did I get there and look out when I was pushed back by the force and air pressure of another explosion. For a few moments, I didn't understand, but then I realized that the Israeli promises of a wide-scale offensive against the Gaza Strip had materialized. Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni, her statements following a meeting with the Egyptian president Hosni Mubarak the day before yesterday had not been empty threats after all. What followed pretty much seems surreal at this point. Never had we imagined anything like this. It all happened so fast, but the amount of death and destruction is inconceivable, even to me, and I'm in the middle of it, and a few hours have already passed. Six locations were hit during the air raid on Gaza City. The images are probably not broadcasted on U.S. news channels. There were piles and piles of bodies in the locations that were hit. As you look at them, you could see that a few of the young men were still alive. Someone lifts his hand here and another raises his head there. They probably died within moments because their bodies were burned. Most had lost limbs. Some had their guts hanging out, and they were all lying in pools of blood. Outside my home, which is close to the two largest universities in Gaza, a missile fell on a large group of young men, university students. They'd been warned not to stand in groups as it makes them easy targets, but they were waiting for buses to take them home. 7 were killed, 4 students and 3 of our neighbor's kids, young men who were from the Rayes family and who were best friends. As I'm writing this, I can hear a funeral procession go by outside. I looked out the window a moment ago, and it was the 3 Rayes boys. They spent all their time together when they were alive. They died together, and now they're sharing the same funeral together. Nothing could stop my 14-year-old brother from rushing out to see the bodies of his friends lying in the street right after they were killed. He hasn't spoken a word since.
Palestinian academic Dr. Haider Aid reports.
The airstrikes took place around 11:25 a.m., and that's the time when children go back home from school. The whole thing took actually place in less than 10 minutes. I mean, we had hundreds of Israeli missiles being launched against police stations, schools, mosques, and so on and so forth. And that moment, actually, I was being interviewed by, I was at a studio being interviewed by a TV crew from Europe. And the whole building shook, and we rushed to the window, and we saw huge actually explosions coming from everywhere, but mainly from the main police station in Rimal neighborhood where I live. And then at that moment, you usually don't know what to do. Actually, you get confused. And the first thing that came to my mind is to go to hospital, because I know people who work as policemen, you know, people who organize traffic and so on and so forth. So most of the people actually who got killed are teenagers who were getting training to become, you know, traffic officers.
So Ali, give us your assessment of what just happened. There are 40 organized airstrikes, missile strikes by the Israeli occupation military at about noon in Gaza earlier this morning, and about 200 people have been killed, several hundred wounded. Give us your assessment and your reaction on what's happening now.
Well, my assessment, my reaction, of course, is horror, which is felt by Palestinians and many other people across the world. I spoke this morning, just to give you some more of what I know. The mainstream media are reporting that over 200 Palestinians have been killed in these widespread and ongoing Israeli air attacks that have targeted at least 40 locations in the Israeli-occupied Gaza Strip. It's reported that about 60 U.S.-supplied Israeli F-16s, as well as a number of Apache helicopters, were used against 1.5 million people in the Gaza Strip who are defenseless. And I spoke earlier this morning with EI's correspondent, and I know he's also been on your show many times, Rami El-Meghari in the Gaza Strip, as well as Sameh Habib, an independent reporter in the Gaza Strip. I spoke to both of them. They both reported scenes of horror, of absolute chaos and panic, that the hospitals are overflowing with dead and injured people. Nobody knows at this point how many of the dead are civilians, although I did see on Al Jazeera several dead bodies of children. Many of those, of course, that Israel is calling terrorists and members of Hamas were actually civil police officers.
It's the Apache, the sound of the Apache. It will make a booming now, so... Yes. In any moment, it will make a booming, okay? It will hit a targeting here.
Sameh, where are you exactly? And where is this Apache headed? Can you tell at all?
I am in Gaza City, and the Apache now is just hovering around, trying to set a target. And in a minute, maybe in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, it will hit a target if it will find it. I'm sure it's searching for something.
That's the voice of Sameh Habib. He is a humanitarian and child relief worker, also photojournalist and peace activist living inside Gaza City. Samah, give us a quick update. As you listen to the sounds of the Apache helicopter gunships, the U.S.-made Apache helicopter gunships hovering overhead, give us a quick rundown of the events over the last 24 and 48 hours.
Well, since it's Saturday, we have a new dire situation that we are never accustomed or used to have it. Israelis started to play again with the lives of the civilians across the Gaza Strip. Around 350 Palestinians were killed, more than 1,600 injured. Our hospitals are not able to respond for the calamities and the catastrophe resulted in the cruel and brutal military escalation done by Israelis for the last 3 days. And these catastrophes and these dilemmas will just increase in a couple of days as Israelis are preparing a full military ground invasion. And if this ground invasion will take place, then tens of thousands will be dying. The last 3 days witnessed, as I told you, a very cruel escalation in which the south of Gaza, the north of Gaza, the middle of Gaza, the east and the west were targeted by the Israelis. More than 400 Arabs from the F-16, and you know the F-16, it's an American. Now, can you hear the rocket? Now
yes.
You will hear the bomb. Yeah.
Okay, if you could narrate what's going on for us, tell us what it looks like and
yeah.
And where exactly that bomb just happened.
This is now, I'm in Gaza City. I'm near the borders of the eastern borders of Gaza with Israel. And now around the three Israeli helicopters, and I could see them by my eyes, the red color of their badges, they are hovering and they are just sitting at some targets. And now one of them, as you have heard, just raided on a place. I don't know yet, maybe, but it seems it's east of Gaza or in the north of Gaza. We are used to this. This is the third night that I spend near my window here and just observe what is happening, open my radio, tune, see what is going on. It's a dire situation. It's still too bad.
Samah Habib, you've been putting out news updates for international media over the last few days, and there are two instances of two groups of children, five little girls from the Balosha family killed in Beit Lahia in the north of Gaza, and three children from Al-Abbasi family, which were killed in southern Gaza in Rafah refugee camp. These attacks, which killed these eight children, were launched by U.S.-made Israeli F-16s using U.S.-made weapons. Can you give us an update of the statistics of how many children have been killed over the last few days?
We have conflicting reports about the number of the civilians. According to the local authorities, which is more knowingly having news about the number, they are saying that around maybe 200 out of the total, which is 350, are civilians. Between men and women and children, or elderly men and women. But the UNRWA and the United Nations is saying around 60 are civilians, or 51. So we have conflicting reports. But what I can say and what I can just tell through my observation, through my following up and reporting, I could tell there is a big number of civilians who fall down in the military operation, and not the last was the story of those children who were just living beside a mosque here in Gaza. By the way, five mosques were hit during this military operation. Those children were living from Balusha family in Jabalia camp. They were living beside one of the mosques. Israelis hit the mosque, and the house was hit and destroyed as well. So four of them, along with the mother, were killed, and all of them female children. This is in the north of Gaza, but in the south of Gaza, there was another sad story of three children. I guess some of them were males and some are females. They were hit also by sharp nails, and the house was destroyed up on their heads, and they were buried under the rubble, and they have died. And their pictures were on Al Jazeera and other space channels when they were digging, trying to put them out, to bring them out from under the rubble of their houses.
Samah, we only have a couple minutes left. Could you give us an update of the overall situation, the intensification just in the last few hours? As you're reporting, of course, you're looking outside the window where Apache helicopter gunships are circling an area of Gaza City. Give us an update on some of the other stories that are happening at this moment.
Well, I couldn't count what is going on. We have many, many stories. Every corner we have a story. Every corner we have a story of we have a story of people who maybe lost some of their beloved ones, who just left them and they don't have any news about them. But I could tell you that the last 4 hours, maybe just witnessing more actions from the Israelis. The Apache is excessively coming to the sky because the F-16 was just taking the stage for the last 2 days. Now we have the Apache, and now you could hear the Apache now is just using the heavy gun machines trying to shoot some places. Yes, maybe you hear.
I did. Could you hold the phone out of the window a little bit if it's safe?
Yeah, it's near. This is in the north of Gaza. It's 3 kilometers away from the place I live in. Do you hear the sound?
We hear it.
Yes, yeah, good. The Apache is back and it's hitting and again more targets now. Yeah. Now into my house and I'm trying to turn the light off because I would be a target if they will see me because... All civilians are just committed to their homes. Anyone will be moving, he will be a target for the Israeli Apaches and helicopters. It's above me directly now. It's very close and it's flying and hovering a low distance. And if you just listen, if you give me more time, you will hear the sound of the rocket going outside.
Sam, yes, about how close are you to what's going on right now?
I'm in the middle. Yeah, just a few meters. There was a bombing yesterday and my house got some shrapnel. And a few kilometers, two or three, the battlefield's around me. And I don't know, when I go just back, go home, I go quickly. I just walk beside the walls. I cannot walk mid of the street because it's too dangerous. And even no cars now walking in Gaza. Everyone will be moving by his car. He will be hit. And many cars were hit.
Are the Apaches still hovering close by?
Hovering, yes, it's still hovering. It's more than one Apache. You know, that there is like a kind of a trauma across the Gaza Strip. Children are so traumatized now with the sound, the loud voice of the missiles, the heavy missiles, because the F-16 airplane is being loaded by heavy missiles that everyone weighs around 1 ton for each missile, which is so big when it comes to the time of bombings on the ground. It makes a very loud voice that brings fear into the hearts of the children.
Samah Habib, you know, the U.S. corporate media, the international media, is very quick to report on what they are calling Hamas-fired rockets. You know, as Israel drops, you know, over 100 tons of bombs over the last 3 days on people's heads in Gaza, there's a lot of equal coverage given to what they're calling rocket fire by Hamas. But is it Hamas that is firing the rockets? And what exactly are these rockets? If you could explain a little bit further.
Well, you could hear the background in which the Apaches.
Yes.
Every Apache is loaded with at least 2 to 4 missiles. Every missile just around 500 kilograms. And the F-16 is loaded by 6 to 4 missiles. And everyone... is weighted of like 1 ton and even more, it depends. On the other side, we have the rockets, the playing fire, I call, of Hamas. It's not rockets, it's a playing fire. Every rocket, the weight of each rocket is only around 15 to 20 kilograms, okay? And this is the explosion material inside it. When it goes to Israel, the kind of damage is being caused for the houses is a few, just could not be just observed compared with what we have here. So it's like there is a media propaganda that making up a kind of parallelism between our playing fire rockets and the heavy American rockets used by Israel. This is a false fact that we have to be aware of. The Hamas rocket is not compared with the Israeli big rockets that bring destruction and killings in big places here.
And Semeh, there are also reports that it's not just Hamas that is firing rockets. They're also being fired by Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which is the military wing of the Fatah party, and also the DFLP, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine. So we have Fatah and the communists firing rockets. It's not Hamas.
Yeah. Not only the Islamic faction of Hamas, all the factions who are using this technique, which is just using the small, light, homemade rockets that make nothing compared with the other rockets. So this is to debunk the Israeli allegation that this operation aims at ending terrorism. Fatah is launching these rockets, and Fatah is engaged in a peace process. So how come they are saying this, and they are saying that we are launching a military operation against Hamas? This is only allegation to justify what is happening, to justify the killing of the children here.
Okay, Semeh Habib, please be safe throughout the night. We will check back with you tomorrow as things develop. We're talking about an intensification of the massacre and genocide across the occupied Gaza Strip. That's our good friend Semeh Habib. He is a freelance journalist, and he is also a child relief worker and political activist living inside the occupied Gaza Strip. Semeh, please be careful. We will check back with you tomorrow.
I will try. Thank you indeed. I'll try to be safe.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein with Nora Barrows Friedman. We continue our drumbeat reporting on the attacks that have continued heavily on Gaza. We're joined now again by Fida Kishta. She's a Palestinian journalist, activist, working with the International Solidarity Movement and living in Rafah. Fida, welcome back to Flashpoints. Last we spoke to you was about 24 hours ago. It's been a very heavy bombing. Could you give us the information that you have in terms of the casualties and what's been going on the ground?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk from the south of the Gaza Strip to the north of the Gaza Strip. Where I live in the south of Gaza, Rafah City, the last attack happened yesterday. Today it's another attack, but let's talk about the injuries and the martyrs who killed yesterday. The attack happened 11:40 before the new year started in 20 minutes. It was attacked to a park in Rafah, more than 40 houses damaged, and two people killed. A young guy, 22 years old, a woman, 33 years old. Another 59 got injured, 18 from them women, 16 children, and situation is still the same, the attacks from the airstrikes, and we still expect the incursion from the ground any minute. In Gaza City, the biggest attack was in Jabalia today afternoon when they attacked one of the leader's houses. He refused to leave his house, and he said that he would like to stay in his house. If they want to kill him, then they just go ahead to kill him. But the shock for all the Gazans that they attacked his house by airstrike, and he and another 10 members in his family killed, including his wife and his children. That was the biggest attack for today in Gaza Strip. So the martyrs increased to 414, and the injured increased for 2,250. And the numbers still increase every single minute. Now, the things that the people are talking about, that they started to attack civilians' buildings like Rafah when they attacked the park for children yesterday. It was among the crowded area in Rafah. It is a Shabura camp. It's the most crowded camp. So when they attacked it, it's massive to think about how many could kill if they just throw another rocket.
They attacked the park in a most densely populated part of Rafah in the refugee camp. What was going on at the time? Where were the people when they were hit? Who exactly was in the middle of the attack?
All of the civilians, all of them. One of the interviews that I did was a child, and I asked her, do you think why they attacked the park? And she said, you know, they don't want to even, they don't want us even to have fun. And she said that they were sleeping, and the attack happened. And from the smoke, they didn't see anything. And I saw part of their house is totally damaged. Their house is three floors, and it is part of it. It's really, I can't imagine. The child was talking about the civilians, how they attack civilians, and she kept saying, where is the people who they're talking about? She's a child in her 12th. She kept talking about the children and how they attacked them. She said that they were sleeping. They attacked the park, and many got injured, and they just tried to leave the neighborhood to be somewhere else because they expect something more to happen. In the morning, they returned back to the neighborhood and tried to see what exactly happened. It was really big, what an exoplanet. It's a big genocide, like to see all the children like that. We went to the hospital. Most of the children who got injured, between 5, 4, like that. And even the women, they are old people.
You went to the hospital where the people were taken after the attack. You were talking with children, I guess, the victims of the attack. And this was a child's play park you're talking about, where kids play.
Yes. Yes.
And the attack happened 20 minutes before the new year, and
people
were sleeping.
Yeah, one of the neighbors was kidding about the war. They said, this is the Happy New Year from the Israelis. They sent the rocket to say Happy New Year in their way.
And describe a little bit more of what the scene was like in the hospital, if you could, and what was happening, please.
Okay, the front hospital in Rafah, it's Abu Major Hospital. It's not that big hospital, it's like a clinic, but somehow it helps the people in Rafah to get some treatment. Most of the rooms that we visited and took to the children, all the women there, it wasn't serious injury, but when we asked the people there, the manager of the hospital and some of the doctors there, they said that all the cases that come to the hospital, usually they transfer them to another hospital, could deal with their cases better because it's not that big hospital. They don't have any supplies to work and to make surgeries or anything like that. They just make the first aid and help them and then send them somewhere else. But the general scene in the hospital was, I'm not going to say good, but it was really sad to see these children in the hospital and try even talk to them. For us, we just tried to be with them and talk a little bit with them. And at the end, we just give them some chocolate to make them feel better and leave.
And are people going to try and go back to the place where you mentioned that they went back and you visited the place to evaluate the damage and talk to the people? Where will these children and these families go, the ones who survived, who weren't wounded and are in hospital? What will happen?
Well, one of the children that I asked, would you like to go back to your neighborhood? How are you going to spend your time? Where are you going to go? And the child said, we're going to go back to our house. We're going to stay in our house. This one of the children also said, we met her in the neighborhood. She said, we're going to stay in our neighborhood. We're going to stay in our house. Do you think where we can go? It's a question. Where they can go? It's a problem that the people don't have places to go. Just to give a abbreviation that in Rafah, more than 3,000 houses are demolished by the Israeli army when they built the wall in between 2000 to 2004. So it's going to be a massive problem that we're going to face if more houses are going to destroy. So I don't know exactly where these people are going to go. It's in the winter, very cold. Some people try to fix their windows, as we see, as we saw. They use just pieces of plastic to close the windows. Did you hear this, Attad?
What is going on there?
It's airstrike. It's for sure for one of the houses, the civilians' houses. My son was scared, went to see where it's happening. Do you hear?
We hear it, yes. Tell us more. Can you...
I'm just trying to...
You're checking out the window now to see what's going on? Be careful, please.
I actually opened the door, but... You hear?
Yes.
It's civilian buildings.
These are civilian attacks on civilian areas that we're listening to now. Fida, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay, and these are, as we're talking, there are more air attacks. Are these attacks coming from drones or F-16s or from the sea? Are you being shelled from the sea? What exactly can you say about these attacks right now as we speak?
Well, most of the time it's attacked by the F-16s. The drone, it's SWAR to attack the people. It's just to watch the area and give the orders to these F-16s. That's how the F-16s work. So I'm sure in the news later we're going to hear that many got injured. Most of them going to be children. My family keep watching the television most of the time, and nobody leaves except me and other friends who are trying to cover the news.
My name is Cleva Butterly. I'm an organizer with the Free Gaza Movement, and I was on the boat that left Cyprus for Gaza last night and was attacked today.
All right. Could you talk about, you left from Cyprus, and what was the intention of the boat ride?
Our intention was the same intention as we had when we launched the other five trips to break the siege that Free Gaza has been organizing over the past few months, and that was to bring humanitarian and medical relief to the people of Gaza, and also to bring witnesses into Gaza to document and report on what's going on, and also to volunteer. In this particular case, it was an emergency response to the intensification of the situation in Gaza, you know, with the almost 400 Palestinians who have been killed in the past days, you know, the humanitarian crisis that is deepening, the Israelis' blocking of witnesses, of journalists, of humanitarian aid workers and activists from entry into Gaza. So our intention was to bring medical aid, and we had a request from the Ministry of Health also to bring in specialist doctors. We were bringing in trauma surgeons to come to Gaza with us, but we were obviously blocked today from doing so, which doesn't mean that we're not going to try to go back again in the next 2 or 3 days. But unfortunately, because we were rammed 3 times in quick succession by the Israeli Navy, our boat is out of commission until we get it fixed, so we have to look for another one.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein with Nora Barros-Friedman. We continue our coverage of the ongoing onslaught, bombing onslaught of the Gaza Strip. Over 424 people dead now, several thousand wounded. Joining us is Ali Abu Nima of the electronicintifada.net. Ali, Condoleezza Rice said today that she's working with the Israeli government to create some kind of sustainable peace that will once and for all protect Gazans. Essentially what she's saying is to protect Gazans from Hamas and the people of Israel from the continuing attacks. We caught you on the road, but we really wanted to have you respond first to what Rice is saying.
Well, Rice has been lying about the situation all along. She, like the rest of the Bush administration, and indeed representatives of presidents like Barack Obama, have claimed that Hamas started this round of violence. That's just an outright lie. The ceasefire, which was negotiated on and began on June 19th, was shattered when Israel attacked the Gaza Strip on November 4th, killing 6 Palestinians, and subsequent attacks killed a number of other Palestinians. It is only after those repeated Israeli attacks that Hamas began firing rockets, retaliatory rockets, into Israel. So the issue of rockets and is just a complete canard. What Rice is helping Israel to do, just like she did in 2006 with the attack on Lebanon, is to buy time for Israel to continue to kill Palestinians and to continue to try to impose its peace, the peace of the grave, on Gaza. That is what is going on, and that is the sum total of her diplomatic efforts. Buying time for Israel, shilling for Israel while it bombs Gaza to dust. Schools, universities, mosques, private houses. That's now what U.S. diplomacy is.
Now, we're talking about a situation where in September the United States government supplied a new kind of more effective and vicious weaponry. Thousands of these bombs arrived just in time to be used on Gazans. And she says in her statement today, we're talking constantly with the Israeli government. So they're clearly, there's no even attempt to hide the one-sided nature of the so-called honest broker.
Well, I mean, the United States is actively aiding and abetting these war crimes. The United States, like Israel, wants the people of Gaza to be in a giant concentration camp. Israel is using these American bombs to bomb the tunnels between Gaza and Egypt that are the only lifeline for 1.5 million people through which they've been able to bring in food, animals, medicine, all the basic necessities of life. And they are bombing those tunnels because they want the people of Gaza to be completely surrounded and completely besieged. And to say, you have no right even to resist, that things have to be, the Israeli version of a ceasefire backed by the United States, is you starve to death slowly in this giant concentration camp, and don't you dare try to resist, or we will bomb you to hell. That is the status quo that the United States would like to help Israel create in Gaza.
Our information is that over the last 24 hours or so, the percentage of people being killed, the percentage of people being killed are 57% children. The foreign minister of Israel, Zippy Levni, is saying she denies that this is a human rights tragedy, and she certainly rejects the nature and notion of war crime.
I mean, this is a government which this morning dropped leaflets on the Gaza Strip, saying to the civilian population, leaflets directed at the civilian population, saying that if rocket fire doesn't stop, you, the people of Gaza, will suffer. That is a direct threat from the Israeli government to the people of Gaza, a threat, incidentally, that it has been carrying out mercilessly. I mean, they bombed and destroyed the Ministry of Justice. They bombed and destroyed the Ministry of Education. We had a very moving piece that we published last night on the Electronic Intifada from Dr. Akram Habib, a professor of American literature at the Islamic University in Gaza. He said that they bombed our universities, they're bombing our schools, they're bombing our Ministry of Education. None of these have anything to do with Hamas or rockets or resistance. They, in Dr. Habib's analysis, what they're doing is what slaveholders and colonialists always did in the past. Keep those under your control in ignorance so they can't rebel, so they can't be educated enough to know what the conditions are that they're being held in. Israel has bombed 8 mosques. It bombed a mosque in Jabalia refugee camp this morning. Can you imagine if Palestinians were bombing synagogues? And this doesn't even raise any protest. You have a university bombed, which has 18,000 students, 60% of them women, and not one American university president speaks out about it. You know, you had all these American university presidents who unsolicited signed letters circulated by the Israel
lobby to oppose academic boycott of Israel, say, oh, we can't do that because that would harm Israeli academic freedom. But bombing a university, bombing schools, banning Palestinians from traveling outside the country apparently doesn't harm academic freedom. The silence and complicity goes far beyond the Bush administration, Dennis. It goes to all those in American society who go along with what Israel is doing. They know it's wrong, but they're too afraid for their own positions to speak up about it.
Well, it is, of course, very shocking to see that my colleagues have cleansed this story from the press. It's been going on for some time, but now it is even getting a lot worse. Finally, Ali, we now see that the West Bank has been locked down. We see that the Gaza Strip is circled, and there are more and more Israeli forces being called up. We're hearing reports of Israeli bombing areas where there were landmines to perhaps pave way for a ground invasion. If there was a ground invasion, what are your concerns, and what do you think this would look like?
Well, we've seen what this would look like. We saw what it would look like in Jenin refugee camp in 2002, where in just a few days, 500 Palestinians were killed in an area of just a few square miles. We've seen what it looked like in Lebanon in 2006 and 1996 and 1982. This is a rogue state that has no compunction about killing civilians, and in fact, sees killing civilians as a goal in order to punish the population and put pressure on their leaders. The very definition of terrorism. Now, Israeli propaganda says that, oh, we try to minimize civilian casualties. No, what they actually try to do is maximize the civilian casualties they can get away with. How many civilians can we kill while making it look like we're trying to minimize civilian casualties? When you read the Israeli press, they are much more honest about that than in the censored coverage in the New York Times and National Public Radio. It's quite amazing the free propaganda services that the media, the mainstream media in this country, are willingly, voluntarily providing for Israel. I've never seen it so bad, Dennis.
All right. Ali Abunima, in that note, electronicintifada.net is a terrific place for people to get information. Also, if you want to read what it looks like on the ground, you can read Amira Haas writing in Haaretz, the daily newspaper, one of the major newspapers in Israel. You'll get a different view than you get from the New York Times. Ali Abunima, thanks for joining us on the road, talking to us safely from a cell phone. We appreciate the good information, and of course, we'll keep this dialogue going with you and the Electronic Intifada. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
They started very soon after the sunset. They started moving tanks after like 3 hours of heavy artillery bombardment on the northern outskirts of Beit Lahia and to the east until Beit Hanun. It was very intense. The bombings were very intense, the artillery, and it lasted for about 3 hours. And then a few tanks tried to cross the border, and I think they are now right inside the prison territory, but inside, but right at the border. But they did not move any further since then. And now, I'm speaking to you, it's a little quiet in Beit Lahia. I didn't hear any bombings or any shells.
And about how many tanks would you say can be counted right now at moving into Gaza?
Well, I have no clue. I really don't know because you know it's far away from where I live, but. Reports, I mean radio reports and local radios report that the Israeli tanks have already crossed the border and they are inside the Palestinian territory, but they stopped the positions right at the border and stopped there waiting for instructions.
Dr. Salam, let's talk a little bit more about the invasion. Describe Beit Lahia right now. Describe its proximity to the northern Gaza border, and can you talk about how people in your neighborhood are preparing for this ground invasion?
Well, people are, we are located in Betlehem. Betlehem, as you probably know, is the furthest town in Gaza Strip, right south of the Israeli border. We are only 1 mile away from the border, actually. And people are just trying to take care of themselves, trying to stock on some food and supplies. And, of course, you know, most commodities are missing, and people are trying to cope. Of course, you know, the streets are empty, nobody outside, no cars, no traffic, no... the market is closed. If you go, when I go to the market, there's no market. Usually it's full of people, you know, buying produce and vegetables and fruits and stuff. But I think everybody in Betlehem now is on his house, and if he's fortunate enough to have electricity or to have power, he probably will be watching TV or something like that. They have a very severe schedule for the power in Betlehem. We have the power for 6 hours, and then they cut it off for 12 hours. So 6 hours with power and 12 hours without power. And even the 6 hours are not regular, not steady. Probably during the 6 hours, the power goes off like four or five times because of heavy loads and, you know, it's hard. Yeah, in those 6 hours, you have to make sure that your water pump comes to the tanks on the roof. You have to make sure you bake your bread. If you have baking, you have to make sure your washing machine does the washing. You have to make sure your boiler is working so you can have some hot water. So 6 hours is not enough, and usually people... couldn't find enough time to do what they have to do in those 6 hours. And this is the life here.
That's the voice of Rafi Salam. He's the director of the American International School in Beit Lahia in the northern Gaza Strip, where the Israeli military has just invaded. Dr. Salam, last night your school, the American International School, was bombed by the Israeli force, by the Israeli occupation forces. Can you talk a little bit about that attack and what happened?
Yes, I received a call right about 4 o'clock in the morning from the neighbors of the school saying that Israeli F-16s have just bombarded the school with two missiles that totally destroyed the school and. The guard, we have a guard on site, and the guard is missing. So it was so dangerous for me to go to the school at that time, so I called the neighbors and the father of the guard, who was also looking for his son. And unfortunately, eventually he turned up at the local hospital. He was inside the building at the moment of the bombing, and of course he passed away, and he was cut into pieces. I saw his body in the hospital. He was completely destroyed. When by the daylight, about 7, 8 o'clock, I went to the school, and it was a disaster. It was a total damage. The whole building is just turned into dust.
And you are listening to drumbeat coverage of the ground invasion by the Israeli occupation military now on the ground inside of occupied Gaza. We're joined on the line now by Dr. Musa El-Haddad. He's a retired physician speaking to us from under siege in Gaza City. Dr. Musa, thank you so much for being with us today.
That's okay. It's my pleasure.
So tell us about what's been going on the last hour, how you heard about the invasion. I know that electricity as well as water has been cut in places across Gaza. Tell us how you learned of the invasion and what it looks like right now.
Well, Gaza is in complete blackout. You don't see any lights at all except the fireballs that the F-16 keep shooting. You hear about explosions here and there. I heard about the land. Well, I mean, in the last few days, we've been hearing that the Israelis are preparing for a land invasion. So we're expecting this for the last two or three nights. But tonight, I have a generator at home. So I had it on and was watching TV. And then I knew that they were moving and started land invasion. So now I'm listening to the radio, and that's how I'm following the news. Of course, I had to switch off the generator because of unsafety, and you cannot run it for too long.
Now, Dr. Moussa, I know that you live in a neighborhood that is very densely populated. It's near downtown Gaza City. How are your neighbors and your family preparing for all of this?
Well, there is no safe place in Gaza. We don't have shelters. I know that they just shot two rockets on building, two-story building of for the orphans and families of... it's mainly for the orphans in Palestine. I'm sure you know it. So they leveled it down to the ground, and there's fire in there. This evening, they shot two rockets, F-16, on a mosque during Maghrib prayer time. And they killed 16 people who are praying in a holy place, in a mosque. And this is, by the way, number 13 mosque to be shot at, to be destroyed. But this time it was during prayer time and people were praying, so 16 people were killed. And probably you saw on the news people cut into pieces, and it's horrible. It's just indescribable. It's so unhuman. Killing everything, children, women, destroying buildings. Believe me, it's not a war against Hamas, it's a war against humanity, a war against everybody that is in this highly populated area. All that we can do is just pray for God to save us from this cruel Holocaust against these innocent people.
That's the voice of Dr. Moussa Al-Haddad. He's a retired physician speaking to us in Gaza City. Dr. Moussa, the Israeli military and the foreign ministry claims that they are going in on the ground to, quote, strike at Hamas targets. What do you think they're really going after, and what will this look like?
Well, so far what I've seen in the last 8 days is that everybody is being killed, everybody is being targeted, every building is being targeted, ministries have been brought down to earth, houses of innocent people, children have been killed. Day before yesterday, a family, the woman was injured, her daughter was injured, and five of her daughters were killed. The youngest was 3 years old, and the oldest was 9 or 10. Next day, yesterday, two sisters were walking with their son, and then a rocket was shot at them. Both of them were killed, and the son is in critical condition in the hospital. I went to the hospital. You can see things that can make a young boy with gray hair. It's impossible to describe what's going on. 2,500 injuries, more than half of them with severe injuries. More than 450, maybe 500 by now, killed. More than 10% of those are children, more than 5% are women. So this is not a war against Hamas, believe me. It's a war against everybody in this area.
Dr. Moussa Al-Haddad, the Israeli military is using all sorts of weaponry, a lot of new weaponry provided by the United States. Based on your professional assessment, what can you tell us about the kind of weaponry that's being used?
Well, I'm not really a military person, and I'm not familiar with types of weapons, but from what I see, huge bombs, rockets of every kind, and I'm not surprised if those rockets have some kind of heads on them that can cause severe damage. I mean, I saw places that they were destroyed. You can see a hole in the ground down to about 10 or 15 feet. I don't know what they are using, but they are using every possible weapon to kill and destroy this place.
And finally, Dr. Mousel Haddad, do you have enough food? How are people getting enough supplies to barricade themselves in their houses for an indefinite amount of time right now?
Well, as you know, there was a siege, complete siege for the last 16 weeks. Nothing was coming in, nothing was going out. So hardly there is anything in the stores. You know, I'm lucky that it's only me and my wife here, but what about those families, big families with a large number of children? I mean, I saw queues of people standing in line of 300 or 400 people waiting to take a loaf of bread from bakery stores. Supermarkets are empty. There is hardly anything to buy. As for us, we have whatever we have is enough for a few days, but God help those children.
Okay, Dr. Mousel Haddad, you're a retired physician speaking to us from under siege inside the occupied Gaza Strip in Gaza City. Please be safe, Dr. Mousel. We will check back with you very shortly.
Yeah, please pray for us.